You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. Welcome to the Pronk Pop Show. This is Friday, and I'm going to give my Memorial Day show because Memorial Day is Monday. Now, the whole show is not going to be on Memorial Day, but I wanted to preface my remarks first by saying observe more Memorial Day because the people that we are saluting today are those who gave their lives for their country. So you can have the freedoms you have today. Now, we also celebrate November Veterans Day for all those who have served in the military, such as myself. I was in the Air Force for over 5 years, completed my military service commitment. I was a volunteer. And that's a day for all veterans. But Memorial Day is very much a day for those who died in combat. And those are both men and women through all our wars. And that's nearly or about a million people. That's all the wars. So spend some time, even if it's saying a prayer, to respect and honor those people that serve their country, but in a war where they died and did not come home. Because that's the purpose of a Memorial Day. Now, I know many of you use Memorial Day to go shopping. Nothing wrong with that. Or relax. Nothing wrong with that. But remember those who can't do the shopping anymore, can't relax, because they died in combat. And there's been, over the years, about a million. And Veterans Day, when it comes around, also remember the many millions that have served, but many of them came back but were severely wounded. That's why we have today the Veterans Administration, which unfortunately in recent history has not really served veterans well. So honor the dead as well as those who have served. Now that's all I'm going to say because I really want to get on to the subject of this show. I listen to a lot of talk radio. And let me give you some brief conclusions that I've come to. Many of the people that are today host both your local talk radio shows as well as those that are nationally syndicated, many of those people, especially the men, but we do have some women, they tend to come out of three areas. Some were in radio as disc jockeys. They played music and made comments. Others were sportscasters. Others were attorneys, and many of them still are attorneys. You see, when you have a talk show, you got to be articulate. You got to express your views. And because of that, many of the DJs, many of the sportscasters could not make the leap to talk about breaking news, current events, politics, for various reasons. Because if you're a DJ, you are primarily interested in music. If you're a sportscaster, your focus was on sports. You notice I don't have any bumper music other than in the introduction and the end of my program. And I really do not do sports. Occasionally, I might mention it if there's an item that's dominating the news. But this is not a show for sportscasters or people that are interested in sports. I believe in specialization. So if your passion or obsession is either sports or music, I wish you luck. There's a lot of competition there, and there are fewer and fewer disc jockeys. And many of the people that have made the transition to talk radio were brought into an office, and the radio station said, listen, we're changing the format. We're offering you the position of talk show host. However, if you can't cut it, you're out of a job. Many of them didn't make it. A few did. In other words, you do see, especially on the local level, some of the survivors. I have no interest and never have any interest of being a DJ. It's not that I don't like music. I definitely love music. Even considered it one time as a career very briefly, but ruled it out. As for sports, I enjoy playing certain sports, or did when I was much younger, but I'm not a sports fan anymore because professional sports is very much a business, and if they're not making money in the city you happen to be in, they will move the team. And that's happened to me twice. I'm not going to get into it, but that's why I don't follow sports anymore. Now, I don't, if you're interested in that, that's fine. And there are plenty of people on the radio that cover sports, also cover music. And one of the other formats is religion. I don't really do religion. There are a lot of preachers on the radio. That's fine. If that's your cup of tea, listen to them. Now, why I'm saying this is that's where most of them come from. Some are lawyers, though. And you'll notice there are a lot of lawyers in talk radio as well as on the television. Why? Because they can express themselves and they're good at asking questions. I'm not an attorney. Many people have said to me, you should be an attorney. I said, thank you very much, but no thank you. I remember once I was in grad school and one professor made that suggestion. I said, well, not really that interested. He said, why don't you attend a course to see if you like it? So I did. One of my fields was industrial organization, and part of that field is antitrust law. So I sat in on an antitrust law course at the University of California at Bolt Hall, their school of law there. And it wasn't my cup of tea because what I quickly picked up on, that the students were very good citing cases to support their argument, but I approached it differently. What's the right answer? Not what's Judge so-and-so said. So I really passed on that. However, I was a negotiator of contracts and dealt with a lot of attorneys. And many of them thought I was an attorney. I said, no, I'm not an attorney. You don't have to be an attorney to be a good negotiator. Matter of fact, I think many attorneys make bad negotiators, but that's another topic for another show. Now, I'm giving this background because what I've noticed, and it's really standing out, and it's almost become annoying. There are several talk show hosts, some of the best ones, by the way. I'm not being critical of their shows, but they've turned their shows into what I call Republican radio. It seems that most of their guests on the show, not all of them, but most of them, are people that have either in the public sphere today, either they're a congressman or a woman, a senator, or people running for higher office such as president. Now, I have no problem with that, but it seems that several of them, they make it a steady diet, and then to add to it, the people they invite into the show are former secretaries of whatever, or congressmen or senators, and many of them have actually served in administrations. So it becomes very much, if you're Republican, you can listen to their show. And you're free to do that. And I listened to at least two, one more than another one, that I know ahead of time that that's what they're going to do. Now, sometimes they have other guests that don't fit that mold. And I really like to hear what the Republicans are doing. But what's the subject of this show? You see, if you listen to Republican radio and certain talk show hosts, they like to point out the Republicans are making real progress in capturing not only the governor positions in many states, but also controlling the state legislatures as well as local offices. Well, that got me thinking. There's only two political parties. And over history, there have been periods when the Republican Party dominated, and there have been long periods where the Democratic Party has dominated, not only on the federal level, but local level. This is nothing new. The problem is, neither party today reflects the majority opinion of most people. Now, why do I say that? More and more Americans are leaving both political parties, both the Democratic Party and the Republican Party. And the reason is simple. The political party, and their leadership in particular, have over time, and we're talking 70, 80 years, have moved further and further and further to the left of the spectrum. And what I mean by that, they're in favor of bigger and bigger and bigger government. It doesn't make any difference whether it's the Democrats or the Republicans. So if you're for a limited government, which I am, as a classical liberal, otherwise known as a libertarian, I don't have a choice. We have two political parties that have controlled the House, the Senate, and the presidency for over 100 years. Oh, occasionally an independent or a socialist or a libertarian might get in at a local level. But on the national level, in Washington, it seldom happens. There have been a few examples. And even the people that are libertarian run as Republicans. And I would even say at one time they probably ran as Democrats as well, not any time recently. The point I'm trying to make is, and Gallup polls the American people, and these numbers have been going up over time. Today, somewhere over 40% and rising, it's gotten as high as 47%, consider themselves independents. They don't consider themselves Democrats or Republicans. In other words, if you ask them, they will say independent, or they don't have a party affiliation. Most of them at one time did. I remember when I was growing up rather young in high school, and I need to preface this, that my family, both sides of my family, were Democrats. Because I originally was born and raised in Brooklyn, New York, moved around the New York area to Long Island, lived in New Jersey as well. But all my family on both sides were Democrats. Why? Because their parents were Democrats. And they voted religiously the party ticket. I was the first in my family that frankly disagreed with the Democratic Party. I supported Barry Goldwater when he ran for president in 1964. I couldn't vote for him, but I did support him because he was for limited government. I frankly did not care whether he was a Democrat or a Republican, and I've kept to that approach. I look for a person that has or comes closest to reflect my own political philosophy, namely of classical liberalism, which in the United States is commonly referred to as libertarian. Now, if you go to Europe, classical liberals are called liberals, which can get confusing because liberals in the United States are not classical liberals. They're largely Democrats for big government. They originally were called progressives, then changed their label to liberal for a while. Now they're back to progressives. And we have progressives in both the Republican and Democratic Party, both in the early 1900s as well as today. And that's the problem. Because I say to myself, who do I support? It's not that I can't find one or more Republican candidates, for example, for the office of president, that I could vote for. But let's say I did. And let's say that person got elected. What do you think are the chances of that person really having a dramatic impact on the political party, named the Republican Party? The answer is not very much. And that's the problem. We need today another third party, a party that truly believes in the Constitution of the United States, that truly believes in limited government, and really has integrity. Because both parties have a problem. They need to run for office if they're a representative every 2 years, if they're a senator every 6. And to do that successfully, you need to raise money. And in some districts, a lot of money, especially if you're running for senator, especially in Texas, which is a large state, you're going to need a lot of money. So it's very, very difficult for someone that's not already in office to challenge someone that is. And that's why over time, anywhere from 85 to 95% of the incumbents win re-election. And the reason is simple, because they're getting large donations from contributors that have the money and have access to the senator or representative. And those senators and representatives spend a lot of time contacting and listening to their big donors, what's called the donor base. Unfortunately, the problem with that system is they don't spend enough time and don't listen closely to those people that can't make those contributions. And again, there's always town hall meetings, and you can go to them and voice your concerns, and they can maybe convince you that they'll consider your concerns. But ultimately, who do they really listen to? Sad to say, they listen to the big donors. Donor base, the big campaign contributions, they greatly influence both political parties to the extent that the wishes, the major concerns of the American people are being ignored on a number of issues. And that's what's frustrating about it. And it becomes real frustrating where you have a candidate that is new, doesn't have a record, is challenging an incumbent, or the incumbent is retiring. And you listen to him, and you're convinced that he's for limited government. He truly believes in the Constitution, and he has integrity. I'm sure this has happened to you. And you vote for him, and surprise, surprise, they get elected. And then, usually over a period of years, sometimes in less time than that, they change their tune. They vote for things that you would say, I never thought he would vote for that. You're shocked, or at least disappointed. And that's why more and more Americans are leaving both parties. They've had enough of being lied to, misled, and where they voted for someone, they turn around and within a couple of years, vote the opposite way you thought what they stood for. In other words, the candidates lack integrity. They become co-opted by the political parties. And that is the problem. I challenge you to tell me what the Republican Party stands for. I don't know anymore. I thought at one time they were for fiscal responsibility. They're literally incapable of balancing a budget. Now, yeah, they're slightly better than the Democrats, but just slightly. So what's your choice, really? Paper or plastic? Democrat or Republican? Take your pick. That's the extent of your choice. And you better believe that the political establishment wants people that they can control, that will get along, go along to get along. They don't like Tea Party candidates. Have you noticed that? Even though we've elected several as senator and several in the House, they truly resent the Tea Party. Why? They can't control the Tea Party. The Tea Party is a movement. And the fundamental issues of the Tea Party were they wanted balanced budgets and they didn't want the government to bail out businesses. Those are the two key issues of most people that got involved in the Tea Party movement. There are others. They wanted, for example, to change the income tax code and replace it, for example, with the fair tax. That's probably a third issue. But not everyone that was involved in the Tea Party movement went along with the fair tax. But the one issue, if there was one issue that I would say across the board that those that involved with the Tea Party movement were all about, was limiting government spending. And that is precisely what is wrong with Washington today. Government spending is out of control. And it makes no difference whether you vote Democrat or Republican, because neither party has shown the ability to balance budgets or the ability to eliminate departments permanently so they can live within the means of the American people. And that's probably the issue today. And I don't see what difference it makes that whether I vote for either party, because both of them are oblivious to it. And that's why within 2 years, our national debt will exceed $20 trillion. $20 trillion, where a trillion is 1,000 million and a billion is 1,000 million. These numbers are mind-boggling. Most people, including me, have difficulty comprehending the magnitude of these amounts. And see, another problem is they run massive deficits where they spend more money than they take in tax collections. And as a result, they add the debt. The debt gets higher and higher, and ultimately, you got to pay the interest on that debt. And because of the monetary policy the Federal Reserve is following, it has kept interest rates low, as well as bought huge amounts of this debt. For example, prior to the crash of 2008, the total Federal Reserve balance sheet was roughly around $800 billion. Today, it's over $4 trillion. In other words, over $4,000 billion. Most of that consists of Treasury securities, primarily notes and bonds, some Treasury bills, as well as mortgage-backed securities. So you had two problems. One, the Fed buying or being a buyer, really a first resort, of the Department of Treasury's securities. But two, keeping the interest rates low. That truly did punish savers. And they continue to do this. You see, as far as I'm concerned, the Federal Reserve is a failed institution. Its primary mission was price stability. The problem is they were Congress passed a law in 1913 that created the Federal Reserve, who opened for business in 1914. And over that 100 years, a 1913 dollar today is worth less than 3 cents. In other words, given their primary mission of price stability, the Federal Reserve is an absolute failure. I know they get a lot of respect and people follow what they do, but I always say good intentions are not enough. Results matter. So if your mission was price stability, your record has been abysmal. And it's been on whether it's a Republican or Democratic administration and whoever is appointed to be the Federal Reserve chairman and governors, it's been going on like this. So for a lot of reasons, the American people are leaving both parties. Now, when is something going to change? If you listen to Republican radio, the Republicans are winning. They've picked up governorships, state legislatures, as well as local offices. Well, I'm not surprised. You only have two parties, and the American people have woken up to what the Democratic Party is about. But the Democratic Party, both in 2010 as well as 2014, lost big time at the polls. And I think they're going to continue that trend in 2016. I don't think the Democratic Party is going to be able to elect Hillary Clinton or anyone else should they choose another candidate. And they will continue the trend of losing offices locally, whether it's at city level, or county, or state, as well as in the House and the Senate. But is anything really going to improve? The answer is not much. That's why I'm not a Democrat or a Republican. I think it's a lost cause. Because the key principle, one of the key principles of a conservative or a libertarian is fiscal responsibility, balanced budgets. Neither political party has lived up to that standard, and they're not going to. Today we have another issue that's always in the news and is one of the concerns of the American people, and that is illegal immigration. President Obama is violating the law and the Constitution and the will of the people. The majority of the American people, whether they're Democrats, Republicans, Independents, or whatever party, do not favor illegal immigration. They want the immigration laws enforced. Yet what are both parties trying to do? One avenue is they're trying to increase legal immigration from approximately 1 million a year to 2 million and then 3 million. And that's what many Republicans are about. And the other thing they'll say, for example, the Republicans, is we need to secure the border. Well, that's a start. But what about the 30 to 50 million that are here? See, they never talk about enforcing the law. We don't need immigration reform. We just need a willingness upon the leadership in this country to enforce the existing law. And that's what the American people are asking. Now, I've given many shows on immigration. I'm not going to do another immigration show. But the reason why I mention it is this. And both parties are losing their voter bases. The Republican Party is down to about 25%. The Democratic Party is down to about 30%. So they still have over 55% of the voters. But more and more, and I think the tipping point is when independents are consistently above 50%. Because at that point, you're going to have a number of people, many of them with money, but also candidates, that are going to say enough is enough. The answer is not the Democratic Party. The answer is not the Republican Party. The answer is a new political party that truly believes in limited government, believes in the Constitution, and run candidates with integrity. And when they run, they say things. And guess what? When they become a congressman or woman or senator or president, they actually keep their promises. And that would be a pleasant surprise. So there is a trend in this country, and you got to look at trends. And the trend has been, over time, both political parties have moved towards an agenda which increases the size and the scope of the federal government. And because there are only two parties that try to keep other parties out, it's difficult to get If you want to get on the ballot as a third party, you're going to spend a lot of money and time doing that, especially if you're running a national campaign. But the same is true for a local campaign. And it takes time to build a party. Remember, what has been going on for 85, 90 years, depending on where you want to start. Some would say it's over 100 years in the making, and I think that's an accurate statement. I think you can make a strong case. We've had progressivism in the United States at least since the late 1890s, so that would make it 125 years old. Now, they've had their ups and downs, but both parties have become big government parties. And if you listen to Republican radio, many of these Republicans are for big government. How can you tell? And I was listening to one today, and I'll say it was the Bill Bennett show. I listen to him fairly regularly if I get up early, and today I got up early. And one of the questions, someone called in, and somehow they got on the draft, and Bill Bennett said, well, I am in favor of the draft, which somewhat surprised me because several years ago, he said he was a classical liberal or a libertarian. I never believed it, but he said it. Most people that are classical liberals or libertarians are against the draft, including me. The draft is government coercion. Government coercion. And that's one way you can spot a progressive. They're very big into government, namely the federal government in this case, intervening in the economy. In other words, heavy intervention in the domestic economy through taxes and regulation, but also intervening abroad. So if you see someone that continually wants the government to intervene, you're looking at a progressive. And when they intervene, they're using coercion. The power to tax, the power to draft people, and the regulation. And they're usually fairly consistent. And many of them are Republicans. Today, one of the hot issues, especially after Memorial Day, is what are we going to do about the Islamic State? Many of these interventionists, especially in the Republican Party, want to go back. They want to refight the war. Take it to the Islamic State. Carpet bomb them. Do whatever it takes. There's a problem. And it's a big problem. The American people don't support it anymore. I was very much on the fence with George Bush's Iraq War. And he made a lot of mistakes. But his first mistake was getting involved in it in the first place. But I'm not changing my position. I was on the fence. I could vote either way. And I'm sure a lot of people felt the same way. But I always give the president, whoever he is, the benefit of the doubt because they probably know a lot more than I do. I'm learning that they don't. They're human, they make mistakes, and a lot of what they base their decisions on, unfortunately, the information is not accurate. And I'm not getting into weapons of mass destruction because that was not the reason we fought the Iraq War. I know a lot of Democrats like to point to that. Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction. He used them on his own people. He hit a lot of them and shipped a lot of them to Syria when he anticipated the United States attacking them. Many say, well, we didn't find the weapons of mass destruction. Well, that wasn't the primary reason we went in there. It was one reason, and I think a good reason. And I still say he had them. Many of them are still buried and hidden, but most of them are in Syria, or were, because they're supposedly destroying them. But the government interventionists clearly want to go back. They want a rematch. And I keep saying, you got to deal with the hand you're dealt. And yes, President Obama made a mistake when he bugged out of Iraq, and that's what he did. He cut and run. Now, why? He saw an opportunity when the Iraqis did not agreed, I forget the term, there's a status of forces agreement, which sets forth the rights of, for example, U.S. servicemen not to be tried in Iraqi courts. When they couldn't reach an agreement of that, he pulled the troops out as commander-in-chief. He perfectly has the right to do. You elected him, he's commander-in-chief. If that's his decision, that's his decision. What's the problem with that? He was told by his military and Central Intelligence Agency and the National Security Agency that if you leave, in other words, we don't leave a significant force, I would say anywhere from 30 to 50,000 troops, this is going to go sour. In other words, if you leave a vacuum, what's going to happen? The Shias are going to go after the Sunnis, and the Sunnis are going to go after the Shia. And that's exactly what has happened. And it's been going on for decades before we were even there. There's a lot of resentment between both sects, religious sects, and there's a lot of vendettas or revenge seeking. So even though we had fought to more or less a draw and had chased Al-Qaeda out of Iraq, they are now back. The Islamic State largely are former Al-Qaeda in Iraq, together with Ba'athist officers. In other words, those that supported Saddam Hussein. They're back and they're winning. And our interventionists, especially Republicans, they want to go back. I think that's an absolute bad idea. You're supposed to learn from your mistakes, and more importantly, ideally, learn from the mistakes of others. Yeah, Obama made a big mistake bugging out, but it's done. You can't unspill spilled milk. And he's paying a price, and the Democratic Party are paying a price for it. But do the American people want to send troops back into Iraq? I think the overwhelming majority say no way, no way. We provided them billions in terms of military equipment, supplies, as well as training, and then they cut and run. They bug out when the Islamic State attacks them. In other words, we've spent a lot of Americans died and were wounded seriously in Iraq, many of them taking control, for example, of Ramadi, that now is controlled by the Islamic State, the very people that the United States military defeated, in other words, killed or in prison, are now back in power. In other words, Al-Qaeda is on the run. Namely, they're running to Baghdad. They're on the attack. Do I think we could defeat the Islamic State? Of course I do. But you see, what does the Constitution say? You got to declare war. We never declare war, and that's one of the big mistakes. You need the support of the American people before you ever launch a war like we did in Iraq. It's not that that George Bush didn't get what some would say is the equivalent of a declaration of war with the authorization to spend money there. But you see, you need to have a national conversation. What is the national interest in Iraq? And ladies and gentlemen, there's only one. It's oil. And most Americans would say we have a lot of oil in the United States. We don't need it. So what you're seeing is the people abandoning both political parties and feeling that both political parties are taking us in the wrong direction, both abroad and domestically, by overspending, and as a result of economic policies by both parties, the United States economy is growing at less than 3%. What we have today, unfortunately, is a warfare and welfare state. Now, I didn't have time to really address some other issues, which I will in the next show. I really just got started. But the American people feel strongly that we're headed in the wrong direction, and neither party is providing the leadership to change that direction. And electing a Republican as president is not going to solve it, because the more fundamental problem is both political parties are big government parties. Now, with that, I'll close the show with America the Beautiful. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College.